The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast with Herb Street, Pollock, and Negandhi. Every day seems like a breaking news story in college football. So at the time we are taping this on Wednesday afternoon, we've got plenty of things to cover, from UConn being the first FBS school to skip this upcoming season to what's going on in the Big Ten and their schedule release and the idea of Ohio State and Michigan moving up their date and how Big Ten players are uniting, following what we're seeing from the Pac-12. We've got a handful of information coming your way with insiders Heather Dinich, Adam Rittenberg, and Harry Lyles, his reporting on the Pac-12 situation, why he thinks the players there got it right with what they're trying to do in that movement. But first, let's start with Heather Dinich with the very latest on this Wednesday of breaking news in college football. And Heather Dinich now joins us here on the College Football Podcast with Herb Street, Pollock, and Negandhi. Let me tell you, before we recorded this, we had a kind of a come to Jesus moment, right? In the reality of what we're dealing with in a pandemic. And honestly, I think everybody's going through it. But here's the thing. Every single day in August, just get ready. It's going to be a kind of a breaking news day in college football. And Heather, I feel like I could spin a wheel here and we could talk about any subject and it would be a wow subject. So let's just, with the news that we're getting in from the Pac-12 as well as the Big Ten and the unknown with the Big 12, let's just start with UConn becoming the first FBS program to suspend this season because of the pandemic. What are you hearing about this decision and also how this sets up potentially for other teams in the group of five?
So I think it's important to remember first UConn's situation, which is they owe $17 million as an exit fee to the American Athletic Conference. This happened a couple months ago, I believe, that they're going to be independent this season. So right there is a financial glimpse of resources, how the program is different. I heard from three different Power Five athletic directors today from three different conferences who said that this situation, they believe, is unique to UConn because of their circumstances, because of their independence. And it's important to remember that each institution, even within conferences, has different finances and different situations to determine these situations. That being said, it wouldn't surprise me if ultimately everyone in college athletics gets to the same point, but I don't think they make those decisions because UConn triggered it.
This feels like also it's not just the program. It feels like players around the country are now concerned, or I shouldn't say now, but have been concerned, but now are voicing it, especially with camps now ramping up. And they're concerned that they are not being protected. I mean, we see that the reports from Colorado State that coaches are telling them to not report things. And it's this mentality of let's keep it within. Let's not talk about it outside. And players are saying enough. And the vibe I got out of this story with UConn was it's not just the administrator saying, hey, we're going to skip football. It feels like players are saying that we are concerned about our safety as well.
You're absolutely right. That was a big part of that UConn story. And they wanted to preserve their eligibility to use it when it's at a safer time. And I think as you see players more outspoken in the professional leagues, whether it's the NBA or the NFL, that, I think, is trickling down to college athletics and helping empower players on all topics, from racial injustice and Black Lives Matter to name, image, and likeness, whatever it might be. I talked to some Pac-12 players who told me that Trey Boston in the NFL was one of the players who was very influential in supporting them through their initial release of their letter with their lengthy list of demands. But I think it's also important to remember that we're going to see more of this for sure. We're going to see more players opt out for safety reasons. I talked to Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren today and asked him about that. And he told me that he looks at players opting out for health reasons as positive news. He said, we want to make sure it's very clear that if you're not comfortable doing this, go ahead. If you want to be at home with your parents and your siblings, and that's where you feel safe, you should be able to do that without any repercussions this year.
And you mentioned the Big Ten. The Big Ten players published a list of demands dealing with safety during a pandemic in a line with what we're seeing from the Pac-12. I've always felt this, you know, watching, you know, college sports growing up, like when at one point were we going to see some group of young men or women say enough, we're going to form something and kind of have more of a say. And now it's this, like you mentioned, this is the perfect storm of everything, a pandemic, what we're seeing with, you know, the social justice and equality and the idea of player concern and safety and name, image, likeness. And honestly, the player rights here. With the Big Ten now coming in line with the Pac-12, then we have this news story that came out where the Big Ten releases a revised schedule today. And of course, the highlight is Michigan versus Ohio State on October 24th. What are you hearing about how this model was put together and also the idea of starting that season? Each team has two open weeks and 4 weeks built in to reschedule games and the idea that you could potentially start the season earlier than some of the other programs or other conferences.
I asked Kevin Warren, first of all, specifically about Ohio State, Michigan. I said, how difficult was it to change a schedule when you have a game of that magnitude being moved off its regular end of season rivalry date? And he said that when they were making this schedule, he was not looking at particular games. He was looking at the overall flexibility. And I said, the one thing that surprised me was seeing the September 5th start date, given we've seen September 26th from multiple Power Five conferences, and why didn't that influence him? And he said, because there's enough flexibility built in there that if you can start on September 5th, great. But if you can't, then it can push back as well. And he also did say that there's enough weeks built in there that if a team had to quarantine itself for two Saturdays, it allows for that, because that's what we're talking about. If an entire team has to quarantine itself and you're talking about 14 days, you're talking about two games, two Saturdays. And he said this schedule is built to accommodate that.
Okay. Now, as we continue to kind of go spin the wheel on other topics here, there's another big story, and that centers around the NCAA Board of Governors meeting, which took place yesterday. And that story was there was no story. What more can you tell us about this meeting and what that means on the levels of D1, D2, and D3, and then how that trickles down to college football?
Let me just start by saying this. I have never in my career done so many interviews with other people where they have told me, I don't know. and sincerely meant it, like for months. I don't know. And I'm not just saying this. I really don't know. And I believe them. And what happened was on, what day is today? Wednesday? On Tuesday evening, I'm texting people, what the hell is going on with the Board of Government? I don't know. Because it's presidents. And right, like so every athletic director in the Big 12 is waiting to hear from Oklahoma State's president because he's the one on the board. So you got to wait till the Oklahoma State president tells Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, who tells his athletic directors, and then hopefully somebody tells me. But by the time it gets there, it's crazy town, right? So they push it, and then at the end of the day, it was, well, we couldn't make a decision after 5 hours together. So they met again this morning. I can't make this stuff up. So they meet again this morning and they say, well, you guys all make the decisions. You Division One, Division Two, Division Three, you make the decision for yourself. Here's our guidelines. If you can't meet them, you can't play. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting about the guidelines is they set up a phone number. Well, they're going to set up a phone number where athletes, parents, and other people can call and call out things that aren't happening right. So I thought that was interesting, but they have to say by August 21st whether or not they're going to be able to have fall championships. And before we got on the podcast together here, Division III already canceled theirs. So the dominoes are starting to fall there. But I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of those Division III programs already canceled a lot of their sports.
Two things from this Board of Governors meeting. Who's on the board? Like, do you have an idea who's on the board? Because when I think about the decisions that could be made and how it affects so many programs, as well as the state of college football and the state of athletics in the fall, this is honestly, that's a lot on the board and who's involved and how much weight it carries. Can you shed some light on do you know who's on the board and how much this plays a role here on a decision with the ripple effects of everybody else involved?
So I had to look it up a couple of weeks ago, whenever this started, to be perfectly honest with you. And it's comprised of all three divisions, presidents and chancellors, which most sports writers typically don't deal with, right?
Yes.
But I live in Baltimore area, so I called Morgan State because their president is on the board, David Wilson, and he was kind enough to speak to me. And it was terrific because that's exactly what we talked about. What is the role of presidents and chancellors here? NC State's president is on it as well, and I spoke to him. And what Morgan State's president told me was athletics cannot be the tail that's wagging the dog here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important for people to remember because they are dealing with big issues, right? $1 billion issues on campus. And that perspective is so vastly different from an athletic director's perspective, which is dealing in millions and trying to just cling on to its budget, right? And have a football season because it funds 23 other sports or whatever it might be. So the presidents are coming at this from an entirely different viewpoint, of course, with the input of their athletic director. But it is important, and it's important to remember that they're coming from a different place when they're looking at it.
Now, we got more news outside with the American deciding for an 8-conference game schedule, 4 non-conference games. The Sun Belt, I love the Sun Belt's plan. Hey, we're playing football. And when I say that, I'm saying that their heads are down and they're going to take advantage of no football early on from some of the big boys. So they're going to decide we're going to play now so you get to see us, and they could be showcased, which would be, a great avenue for that entire fan base. To me, when I bring that up, I'm talking about teams and conferences that are outside this Power Five conversation. And one thing it feels like, but right before our eyes, a slow shift. What are you hearing on this concept of the Power Fives slowly breaking off and down the road, some of these key decisions being made where the Power Five says, we're going to do what we want to do. We're going to have our own championships and we're going to separate right now from everybody.
Well, I think you have to take all of these theories with a little bit of a grain of salt, right? So there's, you know, a possibility, yes. How will they actually do it? And would athletes actually want to play for it? I think that when you're talking about truly elite athletes like Trevor Lawrence, does he want to play for a Power Five national championship? No, probably not. He wants to play for the College Football Playoff national championship and hoist that trophy, right? I think there's a big difference there, and that's important to remember. And staging something like that is entirely different than saying we're going to stage a national championship for our cross country teams. It's just vastly different. And then the other thing is even if the Power Five were to, in theory, break away from the NCAA, there has to be enforcement and compliance and those things. And regardless of where it comes from, people hate that. So people hate it from the NCAA. You mm-hmm. know, there's whoever is the parent yelling is usually not the most popular person in the room. So they would have to figure out how to do that as well. So there are all kinds of other things, and people have to remember that the Power Five does comprise the NCAA. It is made up of membership. Those Power Five athletic directors are all on committees and subcommittees and all these other things that are the NCAA. So possible, yes. But I have been asking the question, is there a further divide growing between the Power Five and the Group of Five? And I don't necessarily know that that's true. I think we're in a very unique situation in our world right now in college athletics. And it's reflective of what's going on nationally and that everyone is really forced essentially to do their own thing and what's best for their geographic jurisdiction.
Unique times. And Heather, I'm sure that the next time we're going to have you back on the podcast, there's going to be a half a dozen other topics that are breaking news, it feels like. But thank you so much for covering a slew of them right now on a moment's notice. We're taping this Wednesday afternoon. I mean, this thing could be upside down by Wednesday night when you're hearing it, the podcast. So,
Heather, and you know what I'm going to tell you? I don't know.
I'm glad you don't say that to us on SportsCenter, Heather, so thank you.
Thank you so much.
And it's great to have college football insider Adam Rittenberg joining us now here on the College Football Podcast. Heather and I joke with her on spinning the wheel here because there are so many different topics to cover on a Wednesday in college football, and it's a very fluid situation, so those topics could continue to change. But let's start here with Big Ten United and some of the players, you know, going behind the scenes here and communicating the same thing that we've seen from the Pac-12, where, you know, it was reported that there was a 400 player text chain for Pac-12 players putting something together for their rights and their protection, their concerns when it comes to a variety of topics. And now the Big Ten joining. What else can you tell us about this group here and their concerns and what they've presented today?
Sure. Well, there had been some communication between the Pac-12 group and those in the Big Ten that were putting this list of demands together that came out today. I think the big difference, Kevin, is that the Pac-12 list was so broad and covered, you know, many different topics, not just health and safety, but some of the social justice initiatives that the players want. Obviously, revenue and compensation was a little bit bigger part of their proposal. This one is really almost entirely based around, you know, COVID-19 and the protections of trying to play a season amid this pandemic. And so, you know, they obviously have spelled out, you know, third party, testing, which the Big Ten did announce earlier today. It's going to be doing that for fall sports and football to administer and to kind of follow all those different standards. You know, they want, you know, all these different protocols to be strictly adhered to and to have, you know, safety standards that are, you know, to their liking and comfort level if they're going to be attempting to play this fall. Obviously around testing, there's several items and then several, you know, financial items at the bottom, but not necessarily revenue. It's, you know, things like scholarship protections if the season is canceled, adjusting to the cost of living stipends, which Kevin, I heard was a big issue around a lot of college football, you know, to account for, you know, some of the increased personal expenses going on because of the pandemic, and then reimbursing any stipends that were reduced over the summer, which I did hear was a thing, or at least being considered for several schools. So that's the financial component, but the heavy part of the Big Ten proposal is really hooked around, you know, health and safety and trying to make them as comfortable as possible. They clearly had some issues with the NCAA, don't seem to have as many issues with the Big Ten, but in their statement on the Players Tribune said that where the Big Ten is at right now, it falls short of their expectations. So there's still some work to go in their eyes from the conference.
I've got to give the players a ton of credit for some of these demands, especially the sufficient penalties for noncompliance and whistleblower protections for athletics personnel and athletes reporting a suspected violation. Because if you see something, you need to say something, considering this is a group aspect and how we've seen, you know, what has happened with the Marlins in Major League Baseball, as well as the Cardinals, because they're not in a bubble. And this is the same type of life and the same type of atmosphere, especially now when you're talking about students reporting to campus outside of the athletic facility. And you mentioned the automatic medical redshirt for any player who misses any competition due to a positive test or mandatory quarantine. And that says a lot, especially what we're hearing with the reports at Colorado State that, you know, players are told, you know, keep it quiet, reportedly, and keeping it inside. And by opening the door to this, the players are protecting themselves if there are cracks. And I got to give them a ton of credit from understanding this. There is also a time here where we're starting to see, we've seen four dozen NFL players say we're not coming back. And many of those guys can say that because they've got some financial security. They're not coming back to play this season because of their concerns. How did that trickle effect happens with the college football players we've seen so far, with Caleb Farley of Virginia Tech and now Rashad Bateman of Minnesota? And I'm talking about two potential first round picks. Are you hearing here that this could set up now more players potentially saying, hey, my stock is too high, potentially agents working the players to say, why are you going to risk it? You have enough on tape.
Oh, sure. And I think there's two categories, Kevin. So there's the draft eligible players who are projected, like you said, to be selected high in next year's draft almost no matter what. If they have any sort of concerns, and I'm sure agents are talking to them, you're going to see more of them choose to not play this season and just begin their preparation for the NFL. Then you have a category of college players who really, aren't yet at that level, or maybe aspire to be at that level, but probably need to play another season and have the ability to opt out of the 2020 season and still come back in 2021. You saw a Michigan State defensive lineman, one of their starters, do that earlier today. And I don't think that's going to be the last either. So you have the group of guys who are done with college football, getting ready for the NFL. You mentioned Bateman, you mentioned Farley. There's a report about Micah Parsons, who would be by far the biggest name, I think, so far to do that. I think he's a top 10 pick if he comes out, or when he comes out from Penn State. And then you have these others who are, who probably are coming back to college football. At least they say they are, but don't want to participate this season. And now with the NCAA's announcement today, this has already taken place in most of the Power Five leagues. They have scholarship protection, so they're not going to lose their scholarship if they choose not to participate this fall because of the concerns around the pandemic.
The Micah Parsons story could be a huge, huge deal, because obviously players will look around and they say, if the number one defensive player in the country decides he doesn't want to play, what am I going to do? And I'm saying this about a first round draft pick, right? I'm not saying this about, somebody who's trying to, move up in the draft with their stock, and they're, a tweener, and they're saying, how do I get into the draft? How do I get noticed? And, I'm projected potentially seventh round. I want to be a day two pick. But if a guy like Micah Parsons decides, I don't want to play this year because I don't want to risk anything because my health is my biggest concern and I want to look to the draft, do you anticipate that we will see probably a handful of other first round potential picks saying enough is enough? And I'm not bringing up the Trevor Lawrences or the Justin Fields of the world. Justin Fields recently said he's going to play. I'm just saying the trickle down effect of other guys that are not household names, but still NFL scouts and people that follow college football are fully aware of how good their talent is.
Right. And that's exactly the category, Kevin, that I thought you'd see these players start preparing for the draft or declaring for the draft. Caleb Farley, really good player, projected pretty high in the draft, plays for a team that's probably not going to be in the college football playoff mix. A good team, but not a great team. There's not that much incentive for him to play this fall. He's not playing. Same kind of with Rashad Bateman. Good team, not great team, certainly an improving team in Minnesota with PJ Fleck, but a guy that was the Big Ten receiver of the year last year is projected pretty well in next year's draft. The difference with Micah Parsons is that Penn State is a college football playoff contender, a projected top 10 team, the team that's set to challenge Ohio State in the Big Ten. And for a guy like that to opt out, I think is interesting, because he had a national championship to play for in a sense, and you saw the comments from the Ohio State players earlier this week. They don't seem intent on doing that, but I think it'll be very interesting to see if we have those types of decisions from players at Clemson, players at Alabama, other national championship contenders who feel that, hey, that possibility of a theoretical championship, and who even knows if we'll get to that this year, isn't worth my health, and I feel good enough about my chances to go to the NFL. So I think that's why the Parsons, if he makes that decision, that's even more significant.
Yeah, Adam, would this be a wake-up call to every single conference if you got a guy like Parsons say, I'm going to pass, for them to discuss centralized testing? Third-party testing, not just from, the Big Ten, but I'm saying every single major conference deciding we're going to go this way. And I'm aware of the financial repercussions of this, but when you're talking about the Power Five and making sure you still have a successful season, would this be something that would trigger that?
Well, I think it should already be on their radar. And, I know it was on the Big Ten's radar for several weeks, and I kind of reported about this a little bit, that there were people in the athletic training community who really felt it was necessary to have a centralized testing body and a third party handle this just from a consistency standpoint and even a competitiveness standpoint. I mean, right now we're out of season. Is everybody going to handle testing and do the right thing all the time, especially when coaches and competitiveness is involved? Are they going to always do the right thing in season? I think there were some questions, at least in the Big Ten, that I'd heard. And so I'd be surprised if other leagues don't seriously look at this route or go this route. because I think it does satisfy some of those issues as far as consistency and then competitiveness, but then it also satisfies your players. You have two, you know, large groups of players or major conferences that are saying, we need this done at a centralized third party, not just my school telling me this or that, or I'm good to get back in workouts, or I'm good to get back on the field, my coach is telling me. To have somebody on the outside basically saying, Kevin, you can play or you cannot play, you have to quarantine for this amount of time, and then there's no gray area in terms of the school, and this is just how it's going to be. So I think this is a very wise move by the Big Ten, and one that should be replicated from other conferences.
Another big story that's coming out this afternoon from the Bay Area, the Pac-12 planning a loan program to rescue cash-strapped athletic departments if football is canceled. This seems significant, Adam. Your response to something like this story coming out?
Right. Well, I think it's a really interesting development, because we're hearing and we've heard for months, you know, the concern that college administrators have, you know, if the season is significantly compromised or if the season is canceled, the football season, I should say. And so how are we going to survive? This is going to set us back so far. You heard, you know, Barry Alvarez from Wisconsin had a letter a couple of weeks ago, you know, outlining, you know, $100 million in losses if they don't have a football season. And lo and behold, today they started a new campaign for donors to try to offset some of those losses. So what's another way to do that? The Pac-12, you know, anticipating what's going to happen. And, you know, John Wilner's report saying they have set up, or at least looked into, a loan program that its schools could take, where you could get up to $83 million per school at a rate of 3.75% over the next 10 years. And so the idea would be, with the projected revenues for television, you could make up that loan over time and avoid some of the, you know, major adjustments to how you run a program, whether it's staffing, whether it's cutting sports, some of these other measures that we've seen take place. It kind of delays that and allows you to make it up instead of you know, dramatically changing the structure of your program.
Yeah, and according to Wilner, you know, the idea is popular with university presidents, because it would allow schools to bridge that crisis that they're dealing with without having to implement massive budget cuts. But, you know, Wilner does give a number. If all 12 opted for the maximum amount, the total would be, just again, we're talking about one conference, $996 million, just $4 million shy of $1 billion when we're talking about loan money for a conference if we do not have football. That just gives you an idea. And more on this story from Wilner and the Bay Area News Group.com. So for more on that, you can check it out. Adam, fantastic stuff. Thank you for the information here and following up here at a moment's notice. A very fluid Wednesday, very busy afternoon, with more to come in every single day. Let's just put it that way, in the month of August.
No doubt, Kevin. Very, very busy time, but always great to talk with you about college football.
And it's great to have college football reporter Harry Lyles Jr. join us now on the College Football Podcast with Herb Sri Pollock and Nagandi. So, Harry, you have a great article here talking about the Pac-12 players and their decision to organize a movement. And the opening line, or I should say the opening lead here for your description of what's going on, as they're operating with the right blueprint. Because we've heard a variety of different things about, you know, this unified statement from a dozen Pac-12 players. And, you know, in the Players Tribune, it's titled, "We Are United." I want to know, though, with this opening line, they're operating with the right blueprint. When you said that, what exactly do you mean? Because when you look at these demands, they are complex. They cover a variety of different topics when it comes to race, when it comes to class, when it comes to rights, when it comes to safety, and also when it comes to the landscape of not just college football, but college athletics as a whole, especially when they make a demand of divvying up the money 50% when it comes to the revenue. So when you say the right blueprint, what exactly do you mean?
So the other important part of that too is that, you know, I mentioned that the movement is going to get them something, right? Because they, like you said, they made a whole lot of demands in there. A lot of demands that, you know, for all of us, you know, that follow college football, it kind of makes you raise your eyebrows a little bit, right? Because they ask for everything, right? Like, not even just coronavirus things. You know, they made very specific racial injustice, you know, requests. And then, like you said, they had the name, image and likeness in there, the revenue split, all that kind of stuff like that. So they swung big, right? Like that's one thing that, you know, in negotiations, whether that's with something like this, you know, in a job or anything else, you know, you learn that as a kid, right? Like sometimes you go to mom for certain things, sometimes you go to dad. But you know, that obviously is a great negotiating tactic. But what I mean with the right blueprint is, you know, since, the pandemic started, obviously, and then the Black Lives Matter movement took off after, the killing of George Floyd, you know, what we've seen is a lot of college football players, you know, either solo or in a group of maybe two or three or four, you know, that have either called out coaches for remarks, you know, Marvin Wilson had mentioned, you know, I don't know how many months ago now, obviously this debate is kind of blent together now, but, but yeah, you know, he called out Mike Norvell on how he had, you know, talked to his players about, you know, things that they might have been concerned about. And he was like, well, that's not exactly what happened. You know, don't say you did something and you didn't actually do it. And the right blueprint here is that you have a unified front, right? It's not like this was one school and like four or five players. This was, I believe, 12 players from, I think, every single school in the Pac-12. So you've got, you know, a variety there. All the schools are represented. You've got different voices, guys with different backgrounds. So everybody's represented in this group, which is a great starting point, right? And then within that, you've got your demands because, okay, you present your case, you tell them exactly what you want. And then the biggest part about this is, and this is the only way that college football players have ever gotten any kind of progress or at least made, you know, the institution think, is by not playing games, right? Because there's no other way that you're going to actually truthfully get their attention unless you start threatening the money that's in their pocket. And if you look at the numbers that, you know, say, for instance, I can't remember how many millions of dollars that the Pac-12 has gained since, you know, the inception of the Pac-12 network. But if you look at all that money, and then the player's like, all right, well, unless we get X, Y, and Z, we're not going to play. Now $530 million that revenue that the Pac-12 made last year.
Uh-huh.
Some of that is at stake. We don't know how much of that is at stake because, again, we don't know if these guys are actually going to end up sitting out games depending on what the Pac-12 gets done between now and when football season starts. But now you have gotten in their pockets. And because you have a unified front, you've made very clear demands, and you have done the third thing, which again is the most important part, boycott or threaten to boycott games. Now you've got their attention, and now they're forced to sit down and try to fix this problem. Now, whether or not they do that in good faith is yet to be seen. Historically, they haven't really done that, but time will tell. Again, they're going to get something out of this because that list of demands was far too long for them to just come away with absolutely nothing.
And it's part of a negotiation. You ask kind, and then you find a way to get exactly what you want, at least priority wise. And then some things have to go to the wayside, but you have to demand as much as possible. And now more than ever, they're realizing that they potentially have a seat at the table, which they've been wanting for years. Javon Holland is probably the biggest name, the safety from Oregon, on this list. The other thing that stands out here to me too is reaction. And we saw, mm-hmm. you know, the controversy at Washington State, Nick Rolovich and his conversation with his player talking about the idea. Hey, okay, if you're not coming back this season because of COVID, I understand. But if you join this movement, then you may need to start thinking about whether you're going to come back at all. Now he's walked that back a little bit, but all of us have heard the tape released by the Dallas Morning News and that conversation mm-hmm. and how that plays out. And when you see that reaction coming in and with the We Are Unified and Cassidy Woods sticking to his guns, the wide receiver from Washington State, now Rolovich becoming a little bit more aware of the magnitude here. How do you think this is going to be felt throughout the league when we're talking about administrations and coaches?
Honestly, Kevin, you know, it's really amazing right now because we're going through a time in America where, you know, we're kind of being forced to look at things that, you know, oftentimes in day-to-day, you know, our lives that you either just, you know, looked aside or, you know, brushed off, whatever. And with this, like, what Rolovich did was bad. And if he does, let's say this movement is happening 50 years earlier, right? During like civil rights era times and things like that. And Rolovich does that 50 years in advance, the way that we would talk about somebody like that is not good. Like, those are the same kinds of people that we are trying to get their names taken off of buildings, monuments taken down. Like, that's an equivalent. And so for this, it's really amazing, to be quite honest with you, because the organization of this is just, you can't say enough good things about it, because the Pac-12 athletes were able to methodically tie the Black American experience with theirs and call out the NCAA on it in a time where it's just not, where it's being exposed in America and opening people's eyes, but it's become impossible for the NCAA to hide underneath the amateur model and not look like a bunch of scammers right now, because it's just very clear that, like, hey, you can't talk about we're going to be losing millions and millions and millions of dollars, and then you can't even provide these players with, like, you know, correct coronavirus testing. So, like, you're asking them quite literally to put their lives on the line more so than usual, because, you know, football is a very violent sport, which is why they ask for health care 6 years removed from their playing careers, and just, like, act like everything is just going to be okay. So now with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement outside of college football, you've got a lot of these intelligent young men who are looking at this and like, hey, hold on a second. Like, if they're afraid of losing these hundreds of millions of dollars, what are we doing? Because it's just crazy. And then honestly, the reaction that a lot of other people have had, well, it's like, you know, they think that somehow these athletes getting these benefits would somehow affect the sanctity of the game. It's honestly just a terrible, terrible argument, because at the very worst, if they get these coronavirus protections, the thing that everybody's ultimately worried about, which is like playing football, like, you're probably going to get at least some of that, because they're going to try to make it work in a way that is going to actually be smart. It's just kind of amazing to watch all of that kind of just play through and just some of those reactions.
I admire them speaking up, especially you mentioned the idea of the organization. I mean, what, over 400 people on a text chain here? That I can't even fathom that. The idea that you can continue a conversation. I have trouble when it exceeds 6 people. Who's this and who's doing this? But the idea that you can get 400 together in a movement like this. Now, the question is, the group's asking, you know, Conference Commissioner Larry Scott, who makes over $5 million, as well as administrators and coaches, to drastically reduce excessive pay and performance bonuses. There was financial requests that student athletes are demanding guaranteed medical expense coverage for 6 years after their college eligibility ends. That number, 6 years, is a big number. If you can get 3 years, that's a big deal. You know, they're also asking to distribute 50% of each sports conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports. They're going to have major trouble doing that, considering many football programs fund a lot of other sports, especially in programs outside the Power Five. I mean, to give the idea of a 6-year athletic scholarship also is one thing that I think will meet a ton of resistance, but they have the ability to ask all of this along with the transferring one time, you know, and that ability where they can do that and they're not going to be, you know, penalized for it. My next question is, Harry, from what you've gathered, we are also in August, and Larry Scott has said that, you know, he plans on meeting this group later this week. We are in August, the time frame here where when you make these type of demands, it takes some time for a negotiation. And they don't have time on their side, the players nor the conference. What are you hearing about the idea of seeking a resolution down the road here before the season starts?
You know, it seems like right now there's a bunch of guesses out there, because also, at least to my understanding, I know that the communication between the players group and the conference it hasn't necessarily been shaky, but the players have definitely been kind of thinking like, okay, like, this is what we want. And then it kind of gets back to the conference a little bit later, because the players are not afraid right now and they are talking to reporters, which is, I think, great, honestly, because they're just kind of taking this thing into their own hands. Me personally, again, this is just a guess. I would say that the Pac-12 will probably try to tell the players, hey, this is what we're going to do on the coronavirus front, because that is the first and foremost thing that is on everybody's mind. And I think they will also do a lot of the racial justice measures in there, as far as, like, I think it was a committee that had at least three people from each school. I might be getting the details of that wrong. But some of those more immediate things that are not going to affect the Pac-12 dime, I think we're going to see those get done. Mm. And again, the coronavirus protections, because those are the immediate things, right? Which is also kind of the important part of, again, the lead of the article, which was like, this is the right blueprint. And within that blueprint, you're going to need to keep that, because they're not going to get a lot of what they want right now, just because, again, like you said, they got to push this thing over the goal line, right? I mean, it's,
yep,
August. Like, yep, we're trying to play football soon. So we got to get some of these out of the way. So the thing is going to be like, okay, how can we make them happy enough, right? Like, yeah, the Pac-12, yes, to give you like a real life example, right? Within the Black Lives Matter movement in America right now, a lot of what Black people want right now is equality, freedom, right? We want to kind of just like break the system, break the mold a little bit, so we're all playing on the same playing field. And right now, what a lot of people are doing is they're painting Black Lives Matter in beautiful colors on the street and renaming streets to Black Lives Matter and all these other kind of things, when that's not exactly what we're asking, but they're putting a Band-Aid on the issues, hoping that it goes back to the original system and we can all just kind of pretend like none of this ever happened and keep moving on with our lives. The Pac-12 is going to do the same thing with the players. They're going to have answers with coronavirus. They will give some kind of testing measures and make the players feel safe enough so we can get back to the playing field. And they will say, likely in bad faith, that, hey, when the season's over, we'll get back to the drawing board and we can figure some of these things out. And a lot of those things are probably not going to get figured out, but they've got the blueprint. And so when they don't get some of those things, they can go back to the table and be like, all right, well, we're not going to play, and then we can do this again.
Well said. Well said by you, especially when talking about the idea of making changes when this process has taken 400 years and we're still at this point, right? And taking baby steps and trying to understand equality in this country. The other thing too, especially with college athletes, is the turnover rate, right? If you're in the NBA, you're in the NFL, if you're in Major League Baseball, the NHL, you're in any type of professional league, you know that, okay, if you're not going to give in what I'm asking for, then I'm coming back next year. Well, we do not know who's coming back next year, right? So it's the idea of when you can organize here and you have a shelf life of 2 to 3 to 4 years in college, are you going to pass it down? And is the next group, are they going to be willing to carry the torch? And we have not seen that consistently, right? And that's the one thing that's working against them. While they are at the goal line here with, you know, 2 minutes left in the clock, they've got to score a touchdown, but they've got no timeouts and they've got to figure it out. But at the same time, are they going to be back for the next game? And that's the question now that many of, I think that many people will tackle down the road after this season, if they get what they want when it comes to their safety and those immediate concerns, but moving forward and racial equality right now, as they seek racial justice, are they going to get that, let's just say, in February when everything's quiet again? And that, and that's the biggest concern on a movement like this. Can they continue this organization? And I hope they can. It gives me hope in the next generation that they believe in something, and that it's not going to be like we're seeing in the NBA, right? And we're seeing players after every game, they bring up Breonna Taylor, they bring up the movement, and they're saying, we're not going to be just caught in the moment in June. We are now in August, and we're going to be in front of this movement. And that's the most important thing carried out afterwards, after the noise settles down and dies down. Harry, great stuff. Appreciate you joining us here for a topic that that continues to be a developing story throughout college football and the landscape as we head into the season.
Kevin, thanks for having me. I'm sure we'll be doing this again.
Big thanks there to Harry, Heather Dinich, and Adam Rittenberg for joining us here on the College Football Podcast. And, of course, Taylor Schwenk, our producer, does a phenomenal job coordinating and ducking and weaving, because I had no electricity, still don't where I live. So the idea of adjusting our scheduling goes a long way. And I appreciate that to Taylor for all that he continues to do. Everybody's safe here in Connecticut, but we want to make sure everybody continues to stay safe around the country, as well as healthy. And if you want football in the fall, wear a mask and social distance while you enjoy the summer. We'll talk to you next week.